You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Hurling Show. We're down to the final two after an incredible weekend of hurling. Saturday maybe was one-sided, but still incredible in its own right for the win that it was produced and how it was produced. And to go over that game, we have James Ryle, who's in particularly good form. How are you, James?
Very good, Diarmaid. Thank you.
Yeah, good. There's an extra inch or two in that smile. And Derek Honan, maybe not as much. Your side, Derek. How are you?
Hey, lads. How are you getting on? I missed my chance to come in after Clare beat Wexford, but of course he summoned me as soon as Clare were beaten for James to gloat.
When I saw the possibility, I said, "Era, we leave Derek off for another week." What was going on for you, Derek, during the game? Aside from analysis and what teams are doing and everything else, like, just as a Clare man with experience, you're good friends with a lot of these fellas, you know the capabilities. What was happening for you? I know you're up now in the GPA box, so you were enjoying yourself up there. But what was happening for you looking at the first half? What was going on for you?
Yeah, it was a tough watch, Gizzy, being honest. Like, from a Clare point of view, a very tough watch because, you know, pretty quickly into the match, you realised things weren't right here. Like,
were you kind of waiting for that to turn, or was it disbelief or like?
Yeah, initially I was waiting for it to turn, you know, but it kind of, even, you know, Kilkenny didn't take too long to stretch out the lead, and any time that Clare even looked like they might get a bit of a run, you know, they'd concede a free, or Kilkenny would just hit them with a score back straight away. So, you know, it was a pretty tough watch now from start to finish, being honest, because there was never really, you know, you never felt like, okay, we're motoring here now, and, you know, we're going to get the most out of ourselves. You know, that's probably the most frustrating thing is when you go up to a big game like that and, you know, you just don't get a performance regardless of the result, because, you know, it's very hard as a supporter to get in behind it then at all. So it was a trying day and a tough watch.
Yeah, I often sensed it from Wexford supporters, like, as a supporter but as a player as well, like, the last thing you want to ever feel coming off the field is that you've left a load of what your capabilities are in the dressing room or somewhere else other than on the field. And yeah, I was waiting for something to kick in with Clare. And even when they did kick, as you said, even at the start of the second half, there was a little bit of a kick. But I think it was Billy Ryan went up and got a point at one stage. And I was thinking, oh yeah, well, that's fine. Clare can do what Clare are going to do. But Kilkenny are also not being stopped up the other end. So you can go on your run, but it just wasn't turning, like.
Yeah, and you'd have to give huge credit to Kilkenny for that. You know, they didn't give chance.
I think we will be given a load of credit to Kilkenny shortly. But yeah, for sure, they got the setup right.
Because they got set up right. You know, they played from start to finish. They allowed no space for Clare forwards, and they forced the Clare backs into hitting off the ball. And, you know, they realised as well that they can't let Clare, you know, get a bit of a run, because, you know, the game can get away from you then. And Clare showed great comeback in the quarterfinal, and They just snuffed out any chance of a comeback at all. You know, any time there was a bit of a resurgence like that, you know, there was a point tacked on, or they'd win a free, they'd take their time taking it, and it was just, you know, they snuffed out any danger any time it did arise.
Contrasting with with your view, James, on the game, what was going on for you while you were watching it? Was there that similar disbelief, or was this kind of, did you know this is what Kilkenny are going to bring for an Ireland semi-final, because that's what they always bring?
Nah, look, the scoreline was, I suppose, that was something that you couldn't anticipate happening. You know, we were like, I think it was what, 16, was it 14 points at half time, and you couldn't see a way back at that stage. And yeah, they probably flattered Kilkenny a small bit. You know, they did.
Even still, I was thinking, just based on what we've seen this year of Clare and what we've seen of Kilkenny, I was like, still, this isn't like, there's some kind of resurgent, or there's some kind of top level that Clare can hit. Like if I was to believe everything that we've heard, it's like, but there's still a level that Clare can hit that Kilkenny probably won't be able to deal with them at. I know it's 14 points, and maybe in the game now they say, you know, 7 or 8 points isn't what 7 or 8 points used to be. So I was thinking maybe, but yeah, they just...
Actually, when Derek was saying there that Kilkenny kept getting a point back and bringing it in, and it just... I just thought of what DJ Carey always said, and not that I was in a dressing room for many years with him, but he always, you know, if we're ahead in a game, he kind of had a statement that for every point we score, they have to get two to eat into the lead. Mm. And I think it's a great way of, and I've always even used it in club games and everything. If you're up a few points or whatever, you know, for every single point we get, you know, they have to get two back to make any. And
that's what Galway kind of suffered against Limerick, wasn't it? They were trying to tag those points on while Limerick are getting the extra point. You've got this
Clare only needed a small bit more before that crowd would have really got behind him, and Kilkenny, they snuffed out a few chances, and to make it worse, then you know, a chance that the Clare would have for a score, and there was a few of them there. They were turned around and were back over the Clare bar in within a couple of minutes. And Kilkenny were very economical. They missed very little. Clare missed a lot. But Kilkenny just performed very well, yeah.
The economy of their movement, the economy of Kilkenny's movement, I mean, this is something that we've seen time and time again. There's something in... I know Cody talks all the time about, and he was talking about after the game at the weekend, he's talking about the strength of the panel, and he's not too tied into 1 to 15. And some people, his critics would say, well, it's better to have a settled at least 12, we'll say. But whereas he's saying, look at whoever's playing is playing, and everyone's entitled to their chance. But there's something in rejigging the setup that can destabilise consistency. But there is something that he hits on when that lands right, and invariably when you come out of the province, I think, and it comes into an All-Ireland semi-final or a final, they do the simple things very, very well, and that produces something that's synergistic, like the sum of the parts are all of a sudden greater, and you got that sense throughout the game. TJ put the hurling at the very right second. Now you could be putting hurls in left, right, and centre all day, and the way lads are moving now for hand passing and stuff is very different to what it used to be. But they were landing on the ball perfectly every time. It's like it was a masterclass in simplicity that became a masterclass of performance, and it's it's testament to Cody as well. I mean, for the team that he's built, obviously, but I don't know. There's just something in that I don't think many other counties have gotten right to that level.
Yeah, Kilkenny. I thought they looked better hurlers than Clare on the day. Anyway, you know, they just the actual hurling came through, and you know, the two you're talking about, there was two in the first half with TJ, and he was beaten for a high ball, I think, for both of them. But no one, you don't remember that, because the very minute your man played, like, a lad has to take four step, he has to play. And instead of hitting the man, tackling the hurl, flicking somewhere, play the ball. Do you know, the ball, there's only one ball, and he has to release it from his hand. And just the ability to flick that down, Owen Cody, handy pint. And, you know, Kilkenny's shot selection was really good as well. So there was very few times in the game where a lad took on a shot that you said, no, no, no. You know, you'd often, you'd be saying, oh God, he's not going to take this on. And then you'd find out it's a pint and you go, and I found that a lot, even looking at Galway yesterday, I thought they were taking on shots and some of them went over the bar, but very few Kilkenny shots, I think, that they took wrongly. I think the ones they took on were ones they should have taken on. They always seemed to do the right thing and play the ball to the right man. And so, you can talk about the wides, but I think a lot of Clare's wides as well, they were foolish, they were in bad, you know, bad places, bad positions. Kilkenny just probably worked it into a better position, and nearly every point they took was the right option to go for a point, and would have been, you know, they had very few wides, but you'd be disappointed with any of the points that would have been wides if they'd have got them.
Yeah, yeah. Derek, John Conlon, I think that... for any individual player, I mean, it would have been a huge, it would be seismic, we'll say, to lose a Tony Kelly, obviously. How much value would you put on the loss of John Conlon in terms of somebody with that level of leadership and experience, their ability to infuse a confidence in all of the players around, particularly younger players, and the effects that he had on the loss of the game?
I think it had a huge impact, you know, there was a huge Clare crowd up in Dublin, even beforehand in the bars, and everyone, you know, there was a confidence there, probably an expectation probably going up, to be honest, and obviously didn't work out that way. But, you know, the word went around about John missing, and definitely there was a bit of apprehension in the air, you know, as to what they'd do. You know, when I was looking out at the game, Kilkenny looked so compact at the back, and they had, you know, space at the in forwards, with that they were able to deliver ball into space and you know, deliver good ball in. Whereas Clare were nearly the opposite. They looked stretched at the back, and I think a lot of that might have come down to the fact that John was missing. Like, John has a huge amount of experience, and obviously is a leader in the team and has settled into that role, you know, very well. All the lads around him, the wing backs, the full back, the midfield, they're all used to him being there and used to him organising it. And, you know, for him to come out definitely had a destabilising effect. It was a huge ask for Paddy Fitz to come into the team. Like, Paddy hasn't played a minute of the championship so far, and I know he had a few injuries earlier in the year and that. So, like, you're going from John, who has so much experience, and then Paddy come in, it was a massive change, for not just for that position, but for the players around him as well.
And for Dave McInerney as well. I mean, he's definitely mastered seven this year. He's played very well at seven this year, and the wing back is a very particular role in the setup the Clare have been playing. When all of a sudden then you have to drop back into that more of a holding role, the Conlon kind of, it suits Conlon's physical makeup, the stage of his career that he's at. That role suits him perfectly.
Yeah, it does. And like that, Davey was a loss as an attacking option from the wing.
Yeah.
I thought Davey had a decent game at centre-back. I wouldn't say he wasn't necessarily, you know, he was pretty good. I thought maybe his use of the ball could have been better. But like that, just had a destabilising effect for, you know, the position and the positions around him as well. So like that was, you know, a huge loss for Clare, and obviously disappointing for John.
I know it's a hard one. I know it's a hard one for you, Derek, and I do appreciate it. But I do wonder about the expectation. Like, if you're looking back now today on Friday, and you're talking about how Clare were shooting the lights out, were closest to Limerick, were Croke Park was a kind of a home for these young fellas coming in 13, and we all thought that they were going to be forces for the next few years, and that they do perform well in the wide open spaces of Croke Park. And then you've got Kilkenny sitting there kind of almost, I just had the sense of them reading all of that thinking, this is not the game of an All-Ireland semi-final in Croke Park. This is not how you approach it, almost, with that level of expectation. Like, was there, did it is there a relationship there between that expectation and the lack of a showing of a performance?
I don't really think so, Izzy. I mean, like, there was a big Clare crowd there beforehand, and, you know, people were confident. But I was chatting to a few Kilkenny lads, and they were fully expecting to have a win as well. Like, so I don't think there wasn't a massive difference in approach. Like, I wouldn't have said between the two teams. I don't think the lads were overconfident or anything like that. I think they were confident in their ability, same way the Kilkenny lads were confident coming in too. Like,
yeah.
So, like, from Clare's point of view, it's kind of hard. From the outside, it's going to be hard to pinpoint exactly what went wrong. But, like, from the quarterfinal and the semi-final, the drop-off in performance versus the games that they played, all the games throughout that they played in Munster, was huge. And I suppose, like, Clare put so much into that Munster final with Limerick, and, you know, mentally and physically, it seems to have taken off a lot more off the lads than what I would have expected it had. You know,
absolutely, yeah.
And the psychology of sport is amazing, like, because, like, it wouldn't have taken a huge change of for them to have gotten over the line in that Munster final, just by, you know, it was something they drew it at the end of normal time. So another point in the game they would have won, and then would you have had the same level of fatigue afterwards if you're coming off a win in a Munster final? It's kind of amazing to think about it, really.
Well, you'd have that 4 weeks, wouldn't you?
You'd have the 4 weeks, first of all, yeah. Like, there's probably a few, like, I kind of feel like Tony was probably carrying an eagle after that game, because he didn't seem to be moving as freely in the quarterfinal and semifinal as he was, you know, throughout the Munster campaign. So I have a feeling he might have been carrying something, and you have a chance maybe to, if you have the 4 weeks, you have a chance maybe to clear up things like that. But they definitely didn't show the same level of energy against Wexford or Kilkenny. Didn't show anywhere near the same level of energy. And, like, even talking, James was talking there about the wide count and that, and I'd fully agree with him. Clare had a huge wide count, but it's misleading to say that it was inaccuracy that was the issue. I wouldn't have said that was the issue.
Shot selection.
It was shot selection, but they were forced into poor shots by Kilkenny as well. But part of that, then, they weren't supporting the man on the ball the same way that they had been, where, you know, if you were in possession, in the Munster games, in the middle of the field, you'd have two, three short options running off your shoulder, and you'd also have the option inside. Whereas against Kilkenny, the last day, a lot of the time they were just reduced to lumping it, with no, you know, other than Dave Fitzgerald kind of in the middle of the field, who was running off the ball and was creating overlaps. There was very little of that compared to what they had been doing.
That was one of the surprising things about the, I think it was the point Adrian Mullen got maybe around 25, 30 minutes in, I think in the first half. And it came from maybe Dermot Ryan scored a point. He was up forward and nobody came back. I think he might have been picking up Mullen at the time. And he got he just got the puck was hit straight to him. And it was like, how are Clare not working together as well as they were? Like, why weren't they working as well together? It seems like that's what you were built on, was that like the cohesion that was like, we pick it up for the next fella, or and that seemed to, now I don't buy the commentary of it being, I think it was mentioned a couple of times during the match about, you know, they retreated into individualism. Like, I don't think it was to that extent, but certainly something seemed to be lacking in their fight for each other that hadn't been at all a trademark of the performance to date. Like,
yeah, just energy levels. Like, being, and it probably did. It looks as though it reduces into individualism, but lads just probably felt like they were too. Like, that was an obvious case of, you know, a midfielder or a half forward needed to say, okay, wing backs after coming up scoring, I need to get back and cover them. And there's two or three people who could have done that, but felt, obviously physically felt like they weren't able to do it or whatever the reason, but just pure fatigue and like that was not happening. In the first five games of the year, like, it just wasn't happening. Lads were covering for each other all over. I suppose that's what I'm coming back to again. How much they fell off in terms of fatigue and energy levels from the Munster campaign, it's kind of, that's where they need to pinpoint, okay, how did that happen?
Would you see Brian Lohan, if I'm not sure about his contract or status or whatever, but assuming that Brian Lohan is there next year, can you see him changing focus? If, like, I find it very surprising that the Munster final would be a stage at which, and similar to Waterford, I'm just wondering what's the league and the round robin style, the condensed year is obviously very different now to what it was, we'll say, 10 years ago, and teams are bottoming out maybe earlier. Would you put less emphasis on Munster, thinking that, okay, we're planning for September, or is that just something you can't afford to do in Clare because you don't have that guarantee?
Yeah, like, that's it. Like, Clare peaked for the Munster final, and it's kind of been downhill since then, and I was thinking, saying on the way home, like, but you can't, from Clare's point of view, you can't say we're going to peak for an Ireland semi-final or an Ireland quarter-final because you won't get there. You have to peak in Munster in order to get out of it. They don't have that luxury to be able to do that. Now, like, I haven't a clue what they've been doing in training, you know, over the last whatever amount of weeks, but they'll have to look at that as well. Did they change anything after Munster final? You know, did they give enough recovery time or whatever it was? You know, they'll have to examine all that, and I'm sure they will, you know, and I expect that Brian would stay on, and I think everyone in Clare will be hoping that he will stay on and try and right the wrongs of, you know, the semi-final performance. But there's definitely a lot of analysis that they'll have to do there in terms of how did that happen versus how did they end up with that performance versus a performance they had been getting earlier in the year.
Yeah. Is there, James, is it a difficulty for Munster teams having to play the Munster Championship, and then Kilkenny maybe can look a little bit further ahead than Leinster? It's hard to say it without smiling, I'm sorry.
I think you're trying to stir the pot here, Gizzy.
I mean, it's... Kilkenny, is it on the back? I'm joking about that. Is it on the back of, I suppose, your consistency in that All-Irelands are part of your psyche at this stage, where, you know, like, you're looking at the year as a curve, and it's like, well, that's where we're coming up, and Brian Cody, because he has the experience, he has knows how that kind of works at this stage. Yeah, they're following a particular, they're following a particular rhythm, and I would expect other teams to be following a similar rhythm, but they're coming up and they're coming down faster. Clare and Waterford being two of the prime examples. Limerick aren't suffering that because they obviously have they are planning to some degree for a July or what would have been a September All-Ireland.
To me, it's different hurling. There's a different brand of hurling between Munster and Leinster, and you know, without massively going into the debate on the whole thing, like Kilkenny got through on scoring average into the top two in the Leinster, and you know, you can't say that they're trying to judge it at that level to try and come to that, and that will be okay. And we knew Galway had beat, was it Galway to beat Dublin, I think, you know, the day in Nolan Park. And we were watching the phones and we were looking like Wexford were going to beat us, and there was only 2 or 3 points in it. We knew Galway were well ahead, and it says, look, on scoring difference, we're going to get into a Leinster final. But the hurling is just different. And do you know, you look for these pop passes, and Derek was saying that they weren't there for Clare. There's our defenders, and it you know, I'm not being flippant, but our defenders mark attackers. That's we if we have defenders who if three of them never hit a ball out of their hand in the game, we could still win a game really well. They're not designed to be playing in this ball. We don't need the Dermot Burns, we'll say, driving ball after ball or playing these plays in front of we say Galan and the boys, and it's great when it works out, but our backs will only have one job to do, is mark a man. And when you start marking your lad, the pressure comes on, the ball goes in not as directly, and it's every man then to look after his own. It sounds very simple, but I suppose what typified it in the game, if you look at the goal before half time, Mossy Keown's goal. And I think it was Duggan had a shot. Richie Reid blocked him. The ball ricocheted across the square. There was a couple of moments, and eventually it broke back into Richie Reid's hand again, and he launched an attack from 121 directly up to the other 21. But if you look back at the video of that, when he launched that, there was 3 Kilkenny boys marking 3 Clare backs. It was 3-on-3. And I don't think any team in Munster, in that scenario, if they were had a goal threat on one side and they were defending it strongly, and then somebody picked up a ball and launched it, that you'd have 3-on-3 inside. And that's how we got the goal. The ball came down, Billy Ryan was falling, clipped it in front of him, Mossy picked it up,
battled down and
got the goal. So if you went back to a Cork, we'll say, and let's just say Clare were attacking and they launched the attack up, you could have 1-on-3. If you went back to a Waterford, you could have 1-on-3. And it's that different style of hurling that's kind of, you know, so if you're running around and this pop passes are coming out and there's no one tracking your men, like when Galway, who had a Mannion back in the corner, they couldn't get to grips with Limerick. And when they pushed them forward, then hurlers are good enough now to play balls into lads' hands, and sweepers become nearly redundant. If you can put a pressure on their half-back line, stop them putting in the ball, it's just a different brand of hurling. So we'll say the Munster and the Leinster series, you have to finish in the top three to get through. That's kind of where you need to. It's great to go win a Leinster final. It's great to go win a Munster. I think Kilkenny definitely needed that 4-week break. And I think Conlon was a massive loss to Clare.
Yeah.
And not having, because you're going from 2 weeks game to 2 weeks game, you're not getting to see guys in real good training matches. So like we've a two, you know, you have a 2 week break now to an All Ireland. I would say maybe one training session is what you'll have of real intense, where a guy can put his hand up. So you'd feel for Clare when they didn't have Conlon. You'd feel for Brian Lowen trying to put in a guy with maybe limited enough hurling behind under his belt, and not having 4 or 5 training sessions to do with it. But I think that whole, I think the brand of hurling, the style of hurling is completely different. And that's why I said Galway and Limerick, I felt was going to be a closer game, that they'd stand up and they'd mark one another.
Do you see it? Is it a bit unfair to view it as maybe Limerick, Clare, Waterford play a more modern style of hurling, or it's a different style that has maybe come in the last 10 years of possession and fellas off the shoulder and stuff, and that's been looked on now as the way the game is played, and anybody who plays it differently to that is maybe a little bit behind because they're not able to do that as well. Is there something lost there in the more traditional aspect of how maybe Kilkenny would play the game that's not been factored into, you know, which of the provinces are how far ahead? It's not even which of the provinces, it's more how far ahead Munster is ahead of Leinster.
Yeah, maybe so. But then if you take Clare and or Cork, we'll say, and Waterford, But you know, you have got to go back a fair number of years before they've brought home the Lee McCarthy Cup. You know, Limerick, I think, have a bunch of hurlers now. It doesn't matter how they play it, really. They've just got an exceptional bunch of hurlers that came into one group. And you could really set them up. I don't mean anyway, but, you know, it's like me mother would train them to win an All-Ireland. And it's no disrespect to John Kiley or Kinnert, but they're she'd go a long way, you know what I mean? To do it.
Well, I'm not sure what kind of a manager your mother is like, but, you know.
Cody might be bringing her in, Jen.
I doubt it. But, you know, you understand, they're just a brilliant bunch of players, you know. And, you know, the Gallans and... the Hayes and the Lynches and all these guys are generational hurlers. And, you know, they're playing a great system, but they're playing a great system, but because they're very good hurlers. And, you know, they've got a bench that's incredible. But
I think what they both have, what Kilkenny and Limerick both have, more so, I would say, Clare on form, absolutely, as well. But what it seems that they both have, to me anyway, is that no matter who the personnel, in some respects, I mean, you've got 20, 21, 22 maybe on both panels who are absolutely up there. The standard and the style and the commitment to what Paul Kinnerk and John Kiley have devised as a way of playing the game doesn't seem to ever change with them. And even though you slip back definitely in some of the games in the round robin, Kilkenny have that as well. It's like, this is the style, and you play this style and this style will work. And it's not style in the sense of it being stylish. It's a style of play that's absolutely, it's total and utter commitment to it. And when you have that, every player seems to know this is what's expected, and you can't back down from it.
Yeah, and Limerick are possibly even more structured than the way Kilkenny play, we'll say, in the sense that, and that could be a weakness, I think, for them going into a final from a Kilkenny point of view, because they are going to play a team that's going to be, we know what they're going to do, really.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe with a Kilkenny forward line, you're not too sure where they're going to line out, who's going to play where. There might be a few bit of changes, but with the Limerick, you know, you're pretty sure, like if you take Tony Kelly is a hard man to plan for, because the man could be anywhere, and he's just a young lad running around the place wanting the ball. But if you look at Gallan and Flanagan and take them, like, you know, I think it's easy to read what they'll do. That doesn't mean it's easy to stop them, but they'll play the same type of game. They'll come at pace, they'll control the ball, like Gallan's points over his shoulder. I'm not saying you can stop it,
but
We didn't know whether Tony Kelly would be, he could be in eight different positions. He could have started in any of them. So it could be Limerick's downfall, in the sense that I don't think they're going to bring anything completely new to the table. I think that if we look at the way they play and we can say, this is how they do it, can we stop them? I don't know. But I don't think they'll come, and after 10 minutes that you'll have Cody scratching his head wondering, Jesus, what's he doing there?
Yeah.
You know, possibly with Keane Lynch coming back into it and Hayes, and there might be a switch on that side of it. But the brand of hurling, they want to lay off the ball, they want to do the pop pass, they want to work it out from defence. And, you know, it's crazy to give them the ball to such an extent that they can work it out. Whatever, from a cornerback getting it, I don't mind. But a cornerback getting it, then playing another 20-yard, 30-yard pass out to a lad in the middle of the field all alone, he's within striking distance, perfect ball into Gallan. You've got to stop that. You've got to get in their face. But Limerick are a brilliant team. I understand it's, you know, but I think any way they'd go about playing it, they'd play it well.
Derek, do you get the sense that the cat is out of the bag with Kilkenny in some respects for Limerick now? Like, I'd like to come in on the back of maybe a 1-point win, or maybe not as good a performance. Certainly not destroying the other team in our semi-final, because, you know, it looks like everything is going right, and then maybe lads aren't maybe as tuned in. I don't know, can you ever say that about a Kilkenny team, because they all our semi-finals and finals, I can't ever remember them not being tuned in. But is it, yeah, how do you see, I suppose, Kilkenny lining up?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the cat's out of the bag now, because like that now, Kilkenny won't have been shocked that they won that game. I think a lot of them, you know, would have been expecting to win that game. And Limerick are going to be treating it the same way, regardless of who they're up against. You know, there's an All-Ireland final there. I don't think there's any waiting in the long grass, like, per se, for an All-Ireland finalist. You know, you're just going to have to go out and win it. I think Kilkenny, you know, I probably underrated him earlier in the year. I was seriously impressed with him now at the weekend, just in all aspects, like James touching it. Their hurling was far sharper. The first touch striking was far sharper than the Clare lads. And the way the structure of the team was, you know, far more compact and everything. So I think they're going to be well set up. Limerick are obviously have been the best team over the last 4 years, you know. Clare played out of their skin and couldn't get over the line. You know, there wasn't much in it, but they didn't get over the line. Limerick still won those games. And even at the weekend against Galway, I felt like Limerick started the game on fire. You know, the points that Galam was getting over his shoulder and Flanagan was getting over his shoulder, it was outrageous hurling, really. But they didn't, I wouldn't say that they played at that level for the whole 70 minutes. So, you know, I think for them to get over that game, they're going to be better again in the All-Ireland final. And you could say Kilkenny could improve as well. So it has the makings of a really good game. I suppose I probably at the outset of the year, I would have said Limerick are the best team in the country. I still feel like they are. I still feel like, you know, going into that game, I probably would fancy them, even though, you know, I've underestimated Kilkenny so far this year. So,
Harry, you've gotten a few things right, like, and a couple of things wrong. I suppose that's we're all entitled to that. Were you surprised by Galway?
I was surprised by it. I saw them against Cork, and I felt like Cork should have won the game by 8 or 9, but they just missed so many chances. And then I was thinking, you know, Limerick will be more ruthless than that, but in fairness to them, they put in a savage performance. Like that first, you know, 5 or 6 balls that went into the full forward line, lovely crossfield balls that Galan and Flanagan were getting onto, and you were thinking, how are the defenders going to deal with this? But in fairness to Dahi Burke and I think it was the other cornerback, I can't remember his name, but they attacked the next few and they cut him out, and they didn't allow the lads to win it, and they just started really, you know, taking the game to Limerick, and you know they missed some awful chances early in the game, and you kind of felt, is this going to be, you know, are Limerick going to kick on and win this handy enough? You know, after Galway had not capitalised on what you might have assumed was their purple patch, but no, they kept it going for the full game. And, you know, just, I suppose, again, the power of the Limerick bench, which has come to aid in a few games now this year, was evident at the end, and they were able to kick on at the end. But it was very, you know, you'd have to give credit to Galway. I suppose you'd have to give credit to Shefflin as well for the job he's done with them, and to be able to put that performance together.
I felt looking at the game, I was thinking, now I know Limerick raced in, like the ball's going to start where there couldn't be any more ideal for Galan in particular. I know Morrissey and Grealish kind of got to grips with things, and as you said, Galway began to push up, and when it pushed up, actually it suited them an awful lot more, because it knocked things off at source. The balls weren't being laid on a plate for him. You know, you can't stop a forward in, as you well know, when balls are coming in like that. But I felt there was something a little bit pedestrian about Galway. I was like, "Jeez, this is not going to go well for them. They're way off the mark." But I felt it was a bit of a weakness in Limerick actually not driving on. I know Galway came into it and came into it well, and pushing up certainly suited them, but they didn't. In that period from 15 minutes to maybe 25, I thought that there was something not firing as well for Limerick, and I thought there's a reason that Clare got so close to him. There's a reason that maybe they started so poorly in the year. There's a reason they have Kilkenny in the final, and what you were talking about last week, that you might have got a bit of hardship for that, you know, to beat Kilkenny in Ireland, to do it 3 in a row. This question of legacy is actually, it is there, like it is a real thing, and there's a reason that 3 in a row, 4 in a row, 5 in a row are very, very difficult to do, is because this is what you begin to fall off. I know they've been tested, I know that they've answered those tests, and it looks like they're getting stronger, but I felt in that 10 or 15 minutes there that the team 2 or 3 years ago wouldn't have let Galway back in, because I didn't think what Galway were doing was exactly, you know, I didn't think they were firing on all cylinders. I thought that Limerick were around the middle, weren't as hungry as they had been.
Yeah, first of all, the few points the boys were getting inside were incredible. The striking, the accuracy, it's just the first touch. It was just unbelievable hurling.
Unplayable.
unplayable, and not sure anyone can do what Galan can do in that 13 position when he swings onto the left. He's just such a natural flow. Like, Tony Kelly is the closest to him for that ability to get the strike off.
And because he got the, I was thinking, looking at it as well, because he got the goals on the inside earlier in the year, as a back, you're thinking, right, I have to, it's his ability to vary over the scale of the championship. Like, he's not a one trick pony where he goes over the left shoulder. Like, it's, you know, you have to give him that little bit of respect that he can turn and burn you and go for goal as well, you know?
Well, I was thinking that, and I was looking at, like, that they're not getting a massive amount of goals. I think they got one against Clare. They got none yesterday. But if you take Galan, it's such a one-touch and strike is done. You know, if you did actually go out and go all out, all he has to do, if he does nip back inside you. But because they're not getting the killer blows of goals, you know, it takes a lot of points. Then when Galway do get the goal, all of a sudden, like, they've done an awful lot of hurling there at one stage, say at the beginning, and they were 6-1 ahead. And then bit by bit, like, you have to think, I know Hawkeye is there for a reason because they are they are wide.
But
if there wasn't a Hawkeye there, an umpire would have given a couple of points. Like, Galway still done a lot of hurling. Like, you know, twice they put scores on and had to take them off. Mm-hmm. And they were still able to nudge ahead running down. But I thought Galway, they retreated a bit near the end of the game. I thought they had plenty of chances, but they couldn't get that 2-point gap, 3-point gap. They probably needed another goal to really lift it. And look, the panel that Limerick have in, what the subs they can bring on. And it's just, you know, they have as good in the line as what they have in the field. And that, and I can't believe actually they left it as late to bring him on too. I was watching the boys, would they do it? Because the game was in the balance. But it was still 55, 56, 58, up against 60 minutes before they released in some of the boys to see it out.
I think
those balls from outside for the inside line, lads, it's so hard to defend because, like, so the first few went out to the side and Galan won him and threw him over the shoulder. And Dahi Burke then said, okay, I'm going to attack the next. And in fairness, he got out for a couple and he intercepted him. But if the lads out to the field had a half a second more to deliver the ball and Galan goes right instead of left, he's in for a goal, you know, if you're being super aggressive. Yeah. So you're relying an awful lot on your players out the field to put him under pressure, and the Galway lads were able to put him under enough pressure whereby they kind of went to their default outside the forward and the back attacked it and did well then. But, you know, one person out the field just giving his man an extra second, it could result in a delivery that's a point, you know, a goal. And it's just, it's so finely balanced, isn't it? They're so hard to defend.
I definitely think when now maybe they're doing an awful lot of work off the ball in trying to block up those passes, because the balls that were going in after the first maybe 15 minutes definitely weren't as good. But Conor Cooney, Jason Flynn, I mean, I love there's something about the potential in Jason Flynn that I love. I love his style. I love that kind of rangy kind of style that he has. And there's usually, or he had at least a couple of years ago, more composure in that, you know, he's controlling time a little bit more. I was roaring at Jefflin in my head to take him off because he just didn't seem, he seemed to be just doing the wrong thing too often. I would expect definitely for a victory there, like a base standard, 80%, you don't fall below. If you're falling below 80%, you're gone. You're somebody else coming in. That's the Limerick. That's part of that style of what Limerick and that Limerick and Kilkenny have. You can go up and you can go down, but you don't go down past 80. If you're only having an 80, just retreat back to the simple things and try and work your way back into the game. Whereas Conor Cooney, Jason Flynn, Concannon, I know the goal was a good goal and there's a lot to be said for that direct long ball against Limerick as a bit of a shock maybe because they're used to playing it through the lines a bit more. And Conor Whelan as well. I mean, there's some big, like Tony Kelly and Conor Whelan being probably the two standout fellas at the weekend who came away with their, I suppose, their legacy with a little bit more of a question mark on it.
Yeah, and they're, you know, I suppose the whole Tony Kelly, like we, and I said it that we just man-marked him. And he's probably an easier guy to man-mark than Galan. And what I mean by that is that, you know, or even Whelan, that if you, I think, stick on Tony, he's like a young lad. You see him running around, his hand is actually going up for the ball. He's, you know, he's gimme, gimme, gimme. He's like this lad in the playground, just always
He loves having the ball. Yeah, like he loves having. Tommy was like that, wasn't he? He loves like, having the ball. Like some lads, you see, they're almost tense in having the ball. They're doing all the things that they're supposed to be doing, but when they have the ball, they don't seem so comfortable. Whereas he just loves having the ball.
And,
like,
and his game is built completely around running around, kind of really doing as he pleases, looking for the ball and getting the ball and able to get a shot off. So when you put a guy on Tony Kelly and man mark him, it's very hard for him to do that. And you know that's why I won't say it's easier to man mark him, but you can just follow them around the field. Whereas if you take a Whelan and a Galan, their game is just maybe stand inside, break at pace. You know, I don't think it's as easy maybe to get up and stop that.
Yeah.
There's more defending required, shall we say.
Yeah.
You can get a lad to go around in a night, Tony Kelly for the day, and it can work. But, you know, if you're a nine Galan, I don't think it'll work because just that sheer brilliance will come out in the way he plays. So they're two completely different guys, I think, to try and man mark. And I think, you know, people are saying there that Mikey Butler is the man for Galan. I'm not so sure. I think I'd rather see Hugh Lawler on him.
Yeah.
Just he's got massive pace, Hugh Lawler, and I think you got to get out in front of Galan. That's the only way you can do it.
There's something very steely in the. It slowed down that the point that he got in the second half. Dahi Burke came in a little bit late and a little bit high and caught him across the hand. And I was looking, just staring at his face to see what were the reactions, because it was slowed down. He got a full like 3 seconds of him getting the belt, and then he took it around and composed himself and got the score. And there was nothing in his face that said, do you know.
This is Galan.
Galan, like there was nothing. He was just still one of it. Was like Flanagan getting the belt in the back. I suppose he just kind of, well, sure, look at her, Morrissey. He was just like, well, look what I just got the belt and off I go. Like there was no reaction in him to say, poor me.
In fact,
and he could have. He was entitled to, because it's one of those ones where he'd be like, yeah, that's a dirt. Like just as a player, he'd say it was a dirty belt. You know,
if you watch him again after he got the point, the camera went back on him, and he actually looks at the hand and kind of looks at the ref, and he gives a. Do you know, did you not see that kind of a thing? But it was brilliant. Yeah, he didn't.
I always enjoy watching Galan. Like the way, you know, a lot, like you mentioned there, you can annoy a fella out of a game, you can annoy a forward out of a game and be at him all day long. But with Galan, it's funny, like, because he nearly bullies the back a lot of the time. He goes out, like, he'll go out and he'll instigate, like, he'll, you know, he's pushing the back around before ever they get a chance to annoy him. So,
yeah, which is another thing to consider with him, isn't it? You know, if you have, I think if you have a Tony Kelly, like you're here, right, we're here to play ball, like Tony Kelly isn't going after you. So he doesn't really have that edginess isn't there. Whereas with Galan, you're worried about him going in behind for the goal, or you're worried about him being up in front on his left, or you're worried about him, but you're also worried about, you know, this fella's could start bullying me as well. Like he brings a huge physicality. Like
you could
wear a very different player. Like Tony is going to be, you know, Tony's getting on the ball and overlaps and things like that, and running, and he's playing further out the field, but you know, so it's going to take a different player to mark him. And I agree with James. I'd rather, like, from a Kilkenny perspective, you'd have to put Hugh Lawler rather than Butler on him. I think that would be a better call.
Yeah.
Then what do you do with Flanagan?
This is it. This is it. When you tie up one, it seems to open the door for any one of the others. I suppose Keane, that's a big question. Like 15 minutes, he didn't really make too much of an impact. He did a couple of things, you know, well, as he always will, but
how much does it
upset what's already working? Like who I suppose Graham Mulcahy definitely will struggle to nail down a place for the next game based on his performance. And
I think you start a hurler of the year though. If he's good, you know, if he's fit enough, I think you start him.
Yeah.
I know it might throw the thing around a bit, but if he's the hurler of the year, let's say they don't start him and let's say Kilkenny win the All-Ireland, I think you'd have to look at it and say, okay, we introduced him at half-time or just after half-time, but do you know, if he's good enough, he's definitely...
Well, he's certainly good enough. Is he fit?
I think he is.
Yeah.
Kylie said he was fit. Kylie said there was no injuries. And and look, from a Kilkenny point of view, I'm happy we're playing Limerick, and it's not that I think we could beat Limerick that easier, but just a third game against Galway, and I just think that'd be a lottery again, and the media would blow up the whole thing, and
with Cheflin and Cody.
I think so. Yeah,
and that's not needed.
I don't think so. And just purely instigated by the media. Like, you know, I was actually watching Cody and Brian Lone after the game, and both of them were comical enough nearly.
Yeah.
You know, there was no handshake there, and there was absolutely nothing about it. And there was no badness in it. Cody looked up, didn't see Lone come and waltz down to the field, shook hands with all the Kilkenny people, even though people would let you think that he never does that or he only done it against Galway, but shaking hands with the Kilkenny players. And Lone just stood in the one position. He moseyed back over the tunnel. He gave one out glimpse out to see was Cody there. Didn't see him waltz on down the tunnel and no harm done. Yeah. And would either of those two guys think anything wrong of that or bad of it? Absolutely not. And I kind of like that about Lone. There's a kind of that.
I do too.
You know, like it's the thing I don't understand. Like, you're playing a game and you're after losing. He's absolutely gutted. He doesn't want to be going around there just shaking hands for a show of it. Like, it's just. Get on with it, like, so.
It's like, I think you've been good over the years with that, with drinks bans, in that you didn't have any. There's a level of respect that's required, that you know what it is. You have a moral line with it. You know what your responsibility is, and you have to make that decision for yourself. And you're entitled, if you want to. And I'm sure plenty of fellas did over the years. They stepped the wrong side of it and they didn't get a chance probably to redeem it, like, because it wasn't put down cast in stone. And then it comes into the GA now. We'll have, you know, it came into soccer a few years ago where they have to line up, and then some fellas wouldn't shake some fellas' hands. All of a sudden now that was a big problem, because they, as soon as you put something in stone, it's there to be broken. Yeah. And all of a sudden something's broken and everyone's like, oh, well, we can jump on that. Whereas it's like between Brian Lohan and Brian Cody, like, that's, I'd expect two competitors like that, either to lose and be just pure tick. I mean, I don't know, Derek, from your side of it with Brian, like, I don't think he went out to the media afterwards either. I'm sure he just was, I'm sure he was just furious at how the whole thing had played out. Like, I wouldn't see it as a weakness in him. I see that's a strength, if anything, in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, they're both savage competitors, you know, Brian and the two Brians, I suppose. But I'm sure, like, if they ran into each other, you know, in the tunnel after whatever, they'd shake, you know.
But should there be no doubt about that? Absolutely, they would.
It's just the way it goes, like. You probably invited that circus for the All Ireland with Galway not getting there, but it would have been fun for the rest of us to watch, James.
Yeah, the armchair. I think it was Enda McVoy was writing about the psychologists and the armchair psychologists trying to read into it. But at the same time, it was there. Like, it was there for us all to see, and you could see Henry reacting. And there was, like, there is something happening. Like, you can't just say that, you know, it's overhyped, or it is overhyped because everybody has an opinion. So everything that happens is overhyped because, I mean, with, you know, there's a million opinions going, like, flashing out straight away. Like, so
there is, and a lot of people jumped on it and, you know, started giving their opinions without really. And it's the one thing in sport that, you know, I suppose I often look at the, you know, everyone is, you're so invested in it, and that if the thing goes wrong or performance goes wrong, you're disappointed and you're gutted. And some people get over it very quickly. But, you know, in the moment there, I often think of, you know, the Irish soccer team, and, you know, with supporters over foreign, and they come out and say they're the greatest Irish or the greatest supporters ever. And the game is over, and they're after being beaten, and they're there in the stands and they're singing for ages after. And I can't understand it in the sense that I'm picturing being in an All Ireland, being bet by, we say, Tipperary, and there's some lad beside you singing the Rose of Munchkine. Yeah. You know, at the final whistle. You know, you turn around and you say, oh my God, like, how can you? You walk out and discuss, like, it's a different type of scenario. Yeah. And
where I think, and I think this is across the GA actually, and it's come in the last 20, 25 years, maybe as the GA has changed in class, as, I don't know, there's been an expanse in the middle class or whatever way it is, but sometimes it feels like there are values that are being put in by in boardrooms and people who are wearing fine suits saying, this is how we should act, this is how we should behave in this situation. And when I think of Brian Lohan and when I think of Brian Cody, I'm like, well, I don't care how you expect him to act. I don't feel like a sportsman who is like, he has this inbuilt refusal to be beaten, which is what Brian Cody has shown. Brian Lohan played the game that way, and that's why he was lauded and feted, and that's how he played the game the way he did. And now all of a sudden we have these, like, soft kind of value systems put in and said, well, no, this is how you have to react in this situation. And when you don't do it, you're like, well, what kind of a man is Brian Cody when he, because he didn't, I was like, well, I tell you what kind of a man, he's a competitor and he's hurting and that's the way it is, you know. So nobody
should ever ask the question again, what's Brian Cody like, you know. You often get that question, sure. You can see yourself, he's that, you know.
What more do you want
to
know?
What more do you want, like?
Yeah, yeah.
If you can't make it out, you know, it's a silly scenario that has come into it that people have to perform in a certain way.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have to be the case. And like, it just showed the only thing that matter in that semi-final Saturday and Sunday was actually winning the game for all teams involved. And everything else, you know, the rehearsals, the warm-ups, the, you know, comes to Northern Ireland, meet the president, all those other things around it, they're all just have to be done. But however they're done, the performance in the game and winning the game is absolutely tops Everton off. And everything else is just a tiny little percentage.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder sometimes about that. It doesn't seem like, or I don't remember it ever being discussed. I don't know, the GPA was never a thing or amongst players, that straight after a game you've got this microphone is in front of the player of the match or the man of the match or whoever it is, and now all of a sudden that's boomed out in front of 80,000 people there, and they're now speaking on a microphone to 80,000 people, and you're just coming out of this experience of the body, like totally out of your mind in your body, and then there's this microphone. It was one thing when you were just being interviewed by somebody as you know, as we are now, and it's like a one-on-one conversation, but now you hear you're out in front of 80,000, and I'm sure it's a nice experience because you've gotten man of the match, you've probably won the other one, but I just don't know how that became acceptable kind of all of a sudden, you know.
It's like a manager being asked straight after the game, like, are you going to retire or stay till next year? Like, such a time, like, imagine asking Loan.
that question, Derek, Devlin and Clare, I'd say. I suppose they would have been asking, I hope you're staying on anyway, if the question was asked. Like,
I'd say it's kind of understood that he's there, you know. I don't think there's any talk of anything else. Like, so,
yeah. It's in hope that he would. Yeah.
I know, I'd say no one would be asking because everyone knows he's going to be there again, you know.
I want to just give definitely a couple of minutes to what seemed like a bit of a carnival atmosphere in Nolan Park at the weekend. Awfully, I don't know, like there's something, I don't think that I imagine it. I put them in, I suppose I can empathise with them as a Wexford man. Like you want to feel like you're part of something that's heading in the right direction, and that you have some form of respect from, you know, the game of hurling itself. Like, that's a kind of a bottom line in your involvement, and often you've slipped below that line in the last few years, and there seems to have been, a lot of expectation, and like, I couldn't believe the difference just looking at the All-Ireland final and minors in your head, and you have an idea of the minors, and then all of a sudden you remember, okay, these are 17, these are 16, 17, they're young fellas. I don't know how much they responded very well to the pressure, but my God, what a heartbreak.
It was as heartbreaking could be. 27,000 in there, and they nearly saw it out. They should have seen it out. And the free at the end was like, it was just a perfect weighted free. And it's one of those moments in time that you'll go back over, the Offaly players will go back over, if we'd have gone harder, if I'd have jumped higher, if I'd have pulled, if I'd have hit, if I'd have, you'd have so many different things. And I was thinking, even before that goal went in, looking back, I was saying it to someone last week, that I think a lot of games finish now very close, and a lot of games have finished in recent years. And I don't know, is it that more of them are, I suppose, between TG Cahir and more of them being televised? I think the COVID brought a lot of them in club games. But the amount of games that actually end with a late goal or a late score in the last few years, there's so many of them. And I think maybe it was always the case, only, you know, we were only seeing some of the bigger games ourselves, but absolutely heartbreaking to be, you know, I think there were 6 up, 5 up to come back.
It looked like they couldn't lose it. No. Like, 6 points up, man down. Did you see it, Derek?
It was an incredible finish. Like, there was a great picture on the TV. All the Offaly crowd behind the goal with their hand, with their heads in their hands, and all the Tip crowd behind them, you know, going ballistic, and just incredible, you know, moment really. And obviously heartbreaking for Offaly, and you'd have to feel for them, like, and but like, look, they've got green shoots there, you know, that could stand to a lot of the players. They could say, you know, they could take the view, look, we were this close and we have to drive on and get that bit better to win it. Just an amazing game, an amazing moment, and I really respected the ingenuity of the way they approached the free, like, because so many lads would drill it, and you know, there'd be too many bodies in the way to drill it, and the way he just put it perfectly off on it. And
on how many times were we playing and a fella lobbed that onto the 14, or do you know,
it's not easy done.
It's not easy done to get it just coming down on the 6 yard line, like right there, like it's a perfect free, like, and they set up well for it in the movement towards the ball as well.
Yeah, no, it was class. There's so many times that you get nothing out of those frees at all. So, like, fair play to the lad who took it and for the lad who followed in. It just gave a real 50-50 chance, where the chance was kind of a 1 in 20 before that, you know.
And it's all about Offaly's response to it anyway. I mean, that's, you know, the green shoots are there with any loss. The loss isn't the problem. It's your response to the loss is what the problem is.
Tip's name was nearly on that trophy, just the way the whole year went. They had so many comebacks, penalties, extra times, late scores. Yeah, it was just the writing was on the wall. So
It was a great minor championship, actually. Even from Clare point of view, they played 8 games this year, like, which is huge for that age group to get that exposure. Mm. Like, and hopefully will kick on. I think, you know, those players could say to themselves, look, it was heartbreaking, but there's a massive opportunity here for us to achieve something, you know, in the next few years. So, like, hopefully they will, and they'll take it on and improve.
Yeah, there's been a few false starts, but it looks like things are heading in the right direction, which is good. I'd be happy for them for it. Kieran Kingston is gone from Cork. Before we finish up, were you surprised? Is he taking him where he can take him and time to move on?
I was only watching the Sunday game last night, and I was looking at Cusick there and Davey, and they were slagging about, you know, which one of them could take it on. But, you know, I think traditionally, I suppose, the Cork replacement has nearly always come from within, I'd say.
Yeah.
I think, you know, look, I think he's done well, but has he done well either? I suppose if you're getting Cork demand a lot, but, you know, it's been 05, I'd say, since Cork last won an All-Ireland. We were waiting in the long grass in 06, according to Don Logue last night. I don't know if you see it.
Yeah.
But, it's a tough enough job. It's a massive county, just to try and bring it all together. But I think they'd have a look at their style of their hurling. I think they were getting it a little bit better as the year, went on this year.
There seemed to be something wrong at the heart. I don't know. There seemed to be, like, I know they came good, but to me, like, every day we were kind of analysing Cork, we were like, there's something not gelling. There's something in at the core of it. And I don't think for a second that it's Kieran Kingston is the problem at the core of it, but it is the manager's responsibility to find out, what's the core thing, as opposed to any of the stuff around the edges. Like, the core thing is the thing you have to resolve in some respects, and then let everything outside of that kind of filter out from the centre. And it never seemed, to me anyway, I don't know, it never seemed to kind of resolve.
Talk,
like,
they talk about splitting Dublin in the football, we say, split it in half when they were having ultra dominance, and it could nearly favour Cork if they actually split it into three or four quarters, into four quarters. It's just to try, and there's so many hurlers, there's so many clubs, they should be able to pull together a serious team. And
they do have they've a good team. Like, they do have good hurlers there. It's just
There's incredible hurlers, but they're not getting. I don't think they're getting the right mix.
Yeah.
And as regards for Kingston, I think with the young lad being on it, Shane,
I think it makes life easier for him, definitely.
I think so, because Shane's a fabulous hurler, and I think even for himself, and just let him at it, because if he plays it, lads are wondering. Then he doesn't play him. Then he brings him on a sub, and he's awesome when he's brought on a sub at times. And it's a. No.
That relationship is always in the background. Derek, who do you see coming in instead of him? Or
I wasn't overly surprised that Kingston finished up, because, you know, it kind of earlier in the season anyway, it looked like he had the weight of the world in him after a few games, and like that, you know, even for Shane, it'll be easier for him not to see, you know, the stress maybe that the job is putting on his father and stuff. So, you know, I think he's, you know, he can be proud of the job he did as well. They have a good team, but I would probably favour someone coming in from the outside there, you know.
Oh, by controversial. Cork anyway.
Yeah, I know, but I just feel like they could be maybe a bit more ruthless coming in from the outside and maybe hold lads a bit more accountable.
Who are you thinking, Liam Sheedy?
Liam Sheedy would be good. Yeah, Liam Sheedy would be good. Anthony
Davy Fitz.
Good. Maybe James's mother might want to take on that one.
She sent her CV down.
We'd be waiting a long time for an All Ireland.
We might get her in next week for the preview of the final. But there's loads there, lads, and there's loads to look forward to as well. We've got 2 weeks now to stew over what's going to happen. Kilkenny in the long grass, firmly out of the long grass now, if they were ever in it. You're certainly not you don't feel that they were ever really in it. And no. I definitely didn't feel they were in it, no six either, I'm guessing. So,
stuck with you anyway, James.
Well, I remember the long grass myself, but I was thinking that if it was shorter that day, we might have kicked on by more, but it was shorter in 08 and 09 when we came up again one another anyway.
Yeah. Lovely. Okay, look, that's enough, lads. Derek, I know, fair play for coming in today. I know after a performance like that, and I'm sure you had a couple of pints with the lads Saturday night. Thanks for coming in and for joining us and trying to dissect what's going on in Clare, what you have to look forward to, and the rest of the championship as well. And James, to yourself, thanks as always.
No problems.
And you've got a big 2 weeks ahead. That's it. We'll be back next Monday to look ahead to the All Ireland final. We're down to two, Limerick, Kilkenny. James was raising the question: is there something in the legacy of Limerick's domination that they have to beat Kilkenny and a three in a row to make sure of that legacy? But yeah, we'll see how that goes. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll catch you next week.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Diarmaid Ling on Sports Joe.
He hits it, wow. It's over the bar! Oh, holy Moses, what a match!
There's been a missing person in Clare for 81 long years. Well, today, that person has been found alive and well, and that person's name is Liam McCarthy.
They know as much about serious level sport as I know about the sleeping habits of the Ayatollah.
There's a streaker on the ground now. He must be a Kilkenny man because he's quite happy with the situation right now.